Welcome, friends and fiends. This is your host, film critic and comedian Nate Wyckoff, and I'm here to tell you about an exciting giveaway that Warner Brothers Discovery and Colton Classic Films LLC has put together to build your 4K Ultra HD film collection on digital. We are giving away four codes which contain digital 4K Ultra HD versions of Rebel Without a Cause, Maltese Falcon, and Cool Hand Luke. These are films that you absolutely must know as a film buff. You can get this code by being one of the lucky four people we pull from our newsletter list. So go to ColtonClassicFilms.com/newsletter and give us your email and your name, and we'll sign you up for the newsletter and we will enter you in the competition. That's all you got to do. So please go ahead and do that. The contest ends on April 30th and we will send out the winning codes on May 1st. Thank you so much for being a listener. And here's your episode of Colton Classic Films Podcast.
Welcome, friends and fiends, to another episode of Colton Classic Podcast. This is part two of Coming of Age, where we talk about two films thematically relinked. Last episode in part one, we talked about Rob Reiner's 1986 classic, Stand By Me, a coming of age story about four children going to find a dead body. And this week, we've got its partner film, 2015's The Weirdsies by India tour Chris Seaver. Now, we've done another Chris Seaver film on this podcast before. We did 2011's Moist Fury. There are some overlapping cast here. Meredith Host is here, plays Chris. She was in, am I on crack? I think she was in Moist Fury, but Andromeda, played by Desiree Saitia. Sorry if I'm butchering your name, because I know I am. She was also in Moist Fury and plays Jess here in The Weirdsies. The comparison between The Weirdsies and Stand By Me is very apt and absolutely obvious. It is also very clearly a Chris Seaver movie because it is full of gross out humor and interesting choices. I'm interested to hear what everybody has to say about this. So Chris reached out to us after we covered Moist Fury, which we always love to hear from the filmmakers and creatives. I mean, without you guys, we would not have anything to talk about. And I have to talk 24/7. Otherwise, my head explodes. And oh, Jeff's nodding. Thanks. Thanks, everyone. Yeah, no. So he said, hey, I'd love you to take a look at my 2015 film, The Weirdsies, maybe with Stand By Me. And we're like, absolutely. I love Stand By Me. Let's do it. So this is a request, and I'm happy we did it because there's a lot to talk about. The Weirdsies is, I would argue, sort of a dirty sex comedy with a coming of age plot rammed right through it. And I use that term intentionally. It is a story of three women and their gay friend, all of which who are about 25-year-old virgins. And they don't want to lose their virginity to last chance Lance, the douchebag of the town, sort of the Kiefer Sutherland character. So Josh hears that there is a dead body in the woods. And he also understands that for 48 hours after a corpse dies, they have a raging erection. Now, if you're turned off at this point of this movie, you're not going to get any farther. And while I could say that's okay, I personally think that you should give it a go, especially if you've seen Stand By Me and are familiar with it. So these four go out to find this body so they can have sex with it and lose their virginity before they get, I don't know, too old. It's never really explained as to why that's a huge deal, but it is a huge deal to some people. So there. And we've got an interesting collection of people and characters. I don't even really know, much like Moist Fury, there's so much in there of different weird things. I don't totally know how to tackle giving an accurate summary beyond what I just said.
I think you pretty much covered it.
Yeah. And so each character has their own little hangups that we learn about, their real reasons for not losing their virginity yet. And we kind of get a happy ending out of this. I think much happier than Stand By Me because it doesn't have the lukewarm sort of future perspective moment. We also have an alien abduction. So it's it's, I don't know. It depends on how you handle that. I'm just
we have a twist
right.
ending. I mean,
right. Exactly. The twist ending. And honestly, I want to be, I didn't see the twist coming. I didn't see it. But I didn't see the ending of Moist Fury coming either. So maybe it's on me, but here we go. Now, I think most of us enjoyed Moist Fury, except for Greg had some gripes. And I am, which Chris particularly enjoyed. So I'm curious to hear about his take on that. But let's start with you, Jeff. What did you expect going into Weirdsies? And what's your feeling now that you've seen it?
Well, I had some expectations because I've seen one of this dude's films. And how do I feel now that I've seen it? I didn't like this one as much as Moist Fury. I don't know if it's like the novelty's worn off. I actually can't figure out if it's just like I've seen it already and now I've seen it again and I was just like bored with it. The one thing that I would say like critically of this, it needed like a straight man. It needed like the classic character that like isn't in on the joke, that, you know, is essentially the person that we're seeing this zany world through. I didn't have one in Moist Fury, but I don't know, that somehow still worked for me.
I think it being just set as like a futuristic post-apocalyptic world, like it set it far enough outside of like kind of like normal life, whereas this one is just like, yep, just some people that you might run into at the bowling alley.
Yeah, like, it's just everybody's so like extra, like every single character is just like I can't imagine any he gives any other direction other be weird as possible. Like that's what's written on the script. Be weird as is humanly possible.
Let's talk about one of the weird moments for a second, just to give people a sample. When they're going through the forest early on in their journey to find this dead body, they come across the Forest Queen, played by Noelle Williams, who just shows up and starts singing a song about leopard stretch pants. And then they move on from that music video breakout moment. And then the bad guy characters with Last Chance Lance, who are following them, she appears behind them and he turns and he has a line like, "What the hell are you?" And that's the end of that scene. And I have to say,
you're missing a key point. We also have Charlie Day from Always Sunny. Just kidding, we have Troll Boy. Just little Troll Boy.
Troll Boy. I believe now, I'm not sure, we'll have to ask Chris about this. I think that might be Chris's son, who is awesome. He's in like, he's shirtless with like Christmas elf pants, dancing around River Seaver. So those are weird moments, right? And in this way, it is sort of episodic, like Stand By Me. We talked about that before, where it's like a road trip movie, you know, that each section has this own little like interest points that rise and fall and create the momentum that keeps us watching and gets us through to the big plot moments that round out the whole arc. There are lots of things. I mean, Chris Seaver has lots of trademarks, which we saw in Moist Fury and we see here again, like using quotes from other films. Chris is actually in a role as a storekeeper who I believe he uses quotes from another movie as he's shouting at the lead who's demanding donuts and he doesn't have any donuts. So there's, I'm going to hazard that. We'll get to Greg in a second. Mandy, you kind of said a little bit about this. We'll talk to you more. Jeff, you said you didn't like it as much as Moist Fury and you're not sure if the novelty's worn off. I think part of the thing that maybe is, and it might be a personal preference thing, is this movie has a much clearer definitive plot and arc than Moist Fury. Moist Fury is sort of, if you were to compare this movie and Moist Fury, I feel like Moist Fury is Anchorman 1, where there's barely a plot there. It's mostly just ad-libbed derp humor, and which is funny. I mean, you know what I mean? And then you have Anchorman 2, which has a distinct plot that is about the entertainmentification about news coverage, which, so they actually put in sort of a serious plot in a nonsense film. And for example, my wife and my sister-in-law adore Anchorman, and they didn't really care for Anchorman 2, whereas I was the opposite. I thought Anchorman was fine, and Anchorman 2, I was like, oh, I really dig this. And it's sort of like, if there's, I guess maybe it depends on your tolerance for juvenile goofy humor that comes in spates between plot development. Because if you're really like juvenile humor, that's kind of all you want. It's like Bridesmaids. I don't think Bridesmaids had a good plot. Kristen Wiig's character is not likable because she acts like a child and she's an adult. But there are moments of really, if you like it, funny slapstick poop humor. You know what I mean? Whereas you look at one of his other films and like the female-led Ghostbusters, there's actually a plot and it's more evenly distributed. The goofy moments are between plot development moments. So if that's what you're looking for, you're not going to be as entertained. I don't know. What do you think about that, well, Mandy?
Let me just finish my point real quick here. So
you had a point. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So like, it kind of felt to me, and I don't know if it's because it didn't have that like character that was like, you know, Alice in Wonderland, but instead in some weird guy's head that really likes ejaculants or bodily fluids of many different types. Or if it felt like an overly long sketch, and maybe it's because of what you just said, is it had more of a plot to it. And so it was all the same throughout the whole thing. It felt a little bit like the same joke that just kept going on. And like when I got to the 40-minute mark, I remember looking at the clock and I was just like, this, I feel like this was like 3 hours long and it's like four, so I'm only 40 minutes into it. And I think it was just like, I was just trapped in the same joke that wasn't that funny.
It's interesting that you say that, because it does have so Moist Fury has this moment in the late middle portion where it really devolves into utter and complete madness. It's mostly during the sex scene with Deathbone. And it really, it's such insane madness that I don't know how you couldn't watch the spectacle. And the Weirdsies is much more even than that. I don't think there is a moment that it truly goes balls to the wall bonkers. I mean, it's bonkers, but it is evenly bonkers. And the characters, which I think is where you're getting into, they do what we expect them to do. And for plot progression, that's not terrible. But for that sort of Chris Seaver outlandish humor that's so wild, you're right. I think this one is much more on the lower scale. It sort of feels like if you watch Pi versus watching Black Swan. Pi, Darren Aronofsky's Pi, is his indie effort, which has, you know, drug trips about man-eating refrigerators and anal-to-anal prostitution for drugs. And then you have Black Swan, which really just has a woman with an abusive mom who doesn't have a great grasp on sanity and wants to be a famous ballet dancer. Like it's sort of like you take some of the sensibilities that make them very engaging and you find that common ground that a wider audience will be able to accept. And of course, Black Swan wins the awards, right? So I'd be curious to know if Chris saw this as his more mainstream entry. And I'm assuming he is, because the production value is so much higher in this film. It actually looks and sounds quite good. We also have some great ska music in here. I was super excited and blown away to see a track by Mike Park and Dan Powdas of Asian Man Records in here. I interviewed Mike Park for our zine Rearted quite a few years ago, which you can pick up on our store by going to Cult and Classic Podcast. .com. And yeah, so the music really carried it through. Also, it has this sort of like late or mid-90s Clarissa Explains It All grown up and cracked out with early 2000s Hot Topic employee vibe, which I really resonate with. And so visually, I liked all of that. And there were standout moments. I didn't find the time an issue because, like his other films, it's short. It's 1 hour and 7 minutes. But I do think that you're onto something, that it is tempered in a way that Moist Fury is not. Moist Fury was reckless abandon, and the Weirdsies is in some ways tried to rein in, I feel like, some of the weirder parts. You know, a masturbation contest to see who can come the fastest between the three friends and their gay friend is, it's not shocking in this one in the way that some of the moments in Moist Fury were. And I'm going to say this,
it didn't feel like it was really funny. Like it didn't have that balance of like, this is like, I don't know, like the sex scene from Moist Fury, like obviously I found it hilarious because I almost passed out. I was laughing so hard when we were talking about it on that episode. But like, it was just like, this is meant, I don't know, Chris may correct us in saying these things, but like, it seemed like it was meant to be funny and ridiculous, like because of its ridiculousness. Like they went really far with it. They continued the joke like for a really long time. And in a way like that, the masturbating contest that you just mentioned, like it just didn't come off as a joke.
It was very trauma. We've talked about trauma before, and trauma oftentimes will have material that's just meant to be sort of exploitative for the shock moment.
For sure.
And that moment, and I do think that is a moment that I didn't find particularly funny either. And it's sort of like just a placeholder, it feels like, to have the character go and pick up food. And that is, of course, a direct mirror to the scene in Stand By Me where Will Wheaton's character goes to the store and gets food and has this alarming conversation with the clerk about his dead brother. And so I feel like it was one of those things that it might have behooved the film of the Weirdsies to actually ignore its source material inspiration and do a different scene. And
like if they forgot condoms or something, would have been a better parallel.
Although here's one thing I'll say,
you know,
I see what you're saying. I will say this though. Josh Sewer plays Josh, their gay friend. He is a shining beacon of fantasticness in this movie. I lost my shit every time he was on, and he was on a lot because they need food because nobody brought food except, unlike Stand By Me, Josh, who has this tiny little pack that they make fun of him for, this little hobo bag. And he just pulls out food after food and just continually shoves it in his face, getting nothing down his throat, and is just covered in water and rice crispy, you know, like rice cakes and all sorts of garbage. And then goes from sort of like a 5 on the frantic meter to like a 10 when they ask him to spare some food. It's like it's like a manic version of the toilet paper borrowing episode of Seinfeld, you know, like, can you spare? I don't know how much I'll need, you know, like it's that moment. And while it's expected, his manic energy sold me on it. Like the first time he shows up in the bowling alley near the beginning of the film, after we've learned that these three women want to lose their virginity, when he shows up and tells them the plan to go have sex with a dead body's erect penis. And I had to say it again, because that is the plot of this movie, guys. I lost it. Like I was sold 100%. Like, screw James Corden playing a gay man in prom or whatever, Golden Globes. Like, this is a magic performance. Now, I don't know if Josh is gay or not, and that's a conversation on whether or not a person of a different sexual identity should play someone who's gay, but he sold this character to me 100%. And let's talk to Greg about what your take was
I can't wait for this plot twist where Greg loves it.
Well, much like the Weird Z's, nothing will surprise you. Nothing. So, but I don't know. This, I was torn. I had the opposite reaction of you, Nate, and I think you summed it up perfectly. I had to keep from laughing. As soon as the premise was hit of, hey, we're going to go have sex with this dead body, at that moment, I was like, well, if they don't have sex with the dead body, I will give this film a thumbs up. If they have sex with the dead body, I'm going to have nothing good to say about this. So that's pretty much where we're at. But
spoiler alert, they do have sex with the body. Spoiler alert, twist, but yeah.
Which I'll get into that later, but I do want to talk about the cast. The cast was fucking amazing, I have to say. I thought the production value, the acting, the writing, I thought it was overall better than Moist Fury. I thought this film really showed what I think Chris does best, which is parody. I think this was a solid parody film. But I mean, to kind of get into it, spoiler alert, you can't have sex with a dead body for the same reason you can't have sex with an unconscious one, because it's rape. So I think that just kind of, that's my hill where I kind of fell apart.
Yeah, my wife and I were actually talking about necrophilia today, actually. I can't remember if it was related to this movie. That's where my life is right now. But there's sort of this, and Louis C.K. is a very problematic figure. I don't think he should have a career anymore. We've talked about him more than he deserves on this podcast, on my rants. But he had this bit, as some other comedians do, about if people want to be necrophilics, if that's their compulsion, because it is apparently a condition rather than like a choice or a preference in the way that pedophilia is unfortunately a condition. He's like, well, when I'm dead, I don't care. Let them do whatever they want with me and save the rest of the world. I'm sort of in that camp. I mean, I also want to just share this bit if people didn't know that apparently when Arnold Schwarzenegger was our beloved governor here in California, he passed a law making it illegal to have sex with dead bodies, which is interesting because, of course, it had already been illegal to have sex with dead bodies. Two things about that blow my mind, and I know I'm on a tangent here. One is that someone thought it was necessary to introduce a bill about this again. And two, the fact that Arnold Schwarzenegger felt like that was an appropriate way to take attention away from whatever real issue was going on at the time. The reason I say real issue is because if all that was wrong in our country right now were horny teenagers breaking into mortuaries and having sex with dead bodies, I would sleep so much better. I swear to God. I mean, that would be the biggest gift. Now, of course, it is a disturbing moment, especially for families and relatives. I mean, I'll be dead. I don't give a shit. But other people will certainly be. And that's of course, don't have sex with dead bodies, guys. That's what we're saying. Now, I like Chris Seeger has this thing where he often has at least one moment in his movies of intense. It's not even, it's always self-aware, but intense recognition to the audience with a fourth wall break. And that is, of course, the moment where one of the girls goes, when our lead character is like, this is our movie. I'm going to make this movie, because she's an aspiring filmmaker and they're going to move all together to California. And she's like, who would greenlight that project? And then looks directly at the camera. And I laughed. Yes, I knew it was going to be that joke. But it is true. I don't know how Chris Seeger is a magician in getting the funding and ability and cast and everything to make a movie about a plot so inappropriate, and treat it with far more reverence than most people would ever think it deserves, right? Because the idea of preferring to lose your virginity, first off, the idea of virginity and losing it is ridiculous. And they kind of have a joke about that at the end. Like, hey, do you think with all this other sex play we've done that has broken our hymen 20 times over, we were even virgins at all? It's a construct. It's ridiculous and stupid. That said, I think most people in our society think of virginity as the time that they have sex with another person. That person would probably need to be alive in order for it to be like sex with another person, because that's what sex is. So the idea that they're going to lose their virginity to a dead body is like, it's like four to the fourth power irrelevant to the actual problem that they're pretending it is. And guys, here's a spoiler alert. The guy's not dead. And that's the spoiler alert. I'm going to give that to you there. It doesn't ruin the movie, but it was a nice little like, haha. I don't know if Chris added that to make people feel better. I have a feeling no. I think he just added it because it was a beat that he could throw in there that was a joke, and that he.
I think so. Gotcha. I mean, yeah, it's a gotcha moment. It was good.
Yeah,
and it led to the final joke at the credits. So
which was
there's a picture of them. They were all pregnant.
Right.
We're yes, like hello from California pregnant. Or whatever. Yeah.
And I was kind of actually thinking that would almost be funny as well if he was dead, because that's just fucked up. But yeah,
I was just gonna add in that, like, even that twist, I was like, oh, so he tricked them. That doesn't make it better to me. And then the pregnancy, it was basically just like throwing an egg at my face and me saying I don't like it, and then you hit me with a brick, with an egg on the brick.
Yeah, it's sort of like, in the way, I think I mentioned this in Moist Fury, that Chris Seaver likes to troll his audience, right? Like, you always feel trolled watching his movies. And I kind of enjoy that in a way. I will say this, though. I think it's interesting. It does sort of speak to different mentalities, because I had much less problem with this plot and the outcome and discomfort than Deathbone in Moist Fury being able to, quote, deep dick the lesbian out of Andromeda. Like, that was much more upsetting to me as a concept than having sex with a dead body in the woods. And I don't know what that says about me. Probably that either one of them being in my DVD player at any given time is a sign of deep mental illness. But if you know a podcaster who isn't guilty of deep mental illness, tell me, because I don't think they're real. Yeah, so it's just funny. I guess there are...
You know, there were a couple things that I did want to highlight that I thought were really good. I'm trying to pull it up. So Alec Lambert, who played Lance, fucking fantastic. You already brought up Josh. I feel like the two of them were just above and beyond. And then Kate Lewis, who played Katie, which was like the fantasy one, like the nerdy one. I thought she was hysterical.
Talks about her like Game of Thrones fanfic with like a power farting princess.
Yeah. And then there were some jokes that really got me. I mean, you brought up the one where Josh has the little tiny sling over his thing, and to me, that didn't thrill me. As soon as he had that and they're like, oh, like that's all you brought, I'm like, oh, it's gonna be a clown car joke, right? He's gonna pull a bunch of shit out of it later. Okay, great. But when they had the dream earlier about like staying virgins forever and Lance taunting them and all that, and then they're like, oh, like we all had the same dream, like maybe we should go out, and then Josh pops in and is like, it was actually my dream, and they're all screaming. that was pretty good. Yes. That was really good.
Like, and I agree with you, that's funny. Also, the idea, so when they get the moment when they get to the body, right before they have sex with the body, and it feels weird saying that sentence on the air here, but it's true. Before they have sex with this, what they think is a dead body, much like Kiefer Sutherland and Stand By Me showing up to say, kids, beat it, this is our body. Last Chance Lance shows up and he's like, get out of here, I'm gonna have sex with this dead body. And the irony is that is somehow going to negate the ability of these people to have sex with this corpse, which by definition, it's just, there's so many things, there's so many logical impossibilities with the solutions and the parallels in this movie that it just cracked me up. We have also Josh, his secret, because they all have secrets that they have to share, right? his secret is that he's been contacted by aliens in his dream, and he's going to help save them from something or other eventually and go to distant planets. And instead of a gun chasing away the villain, like Last Chance Lancer, Kiefer Sutherland, and Stand By Me, Quasar Helix, the alien prince, king, something of that, shows up and gets rid of the villain. And then we get one of my moments, which I love, when they're all like, you're gonna come to California with us when you come back, right, Josh? And he's like, yeah. And he looks at Helix and goes, I am coming back, right? And he's like, no. And then we get the, you know, Wilhelm scream as they beam away. And that's like, that's it. I thought that was hilarious. It is that like newscaster fight in Anchorman 2. And I was thinking about Anchorman 2 when I watched the movie, where like, it's just gag upon gag that you know are coming, but it sort of like hits it enough that it becomes funny again to me. I liked that moment. I think part of the thing that makes the Weirdsies different from Moist Fury is Moist Fury, so much, there were some dialogue jokes and wordplay jokes, but most of it was physical comedy and absurd, and, you know, theater of the absurd. Whereas the Weirdsies has a lot of comical dialogue. And some of it hits and some of it doesn't, but I do think there's a great deal of it that was pretty funny. But perhaps it's because, and Greg, I agree, I liked the cast of this one a lot. They're delivering it in a very stilted way because of the overall vibe of the movie. Whereas I feel like if they had done the dialogue in Mallrats, it would have been more realistic and the jokes would have, the beats would have been more recognizable and given more time to laugh. I also want to give a shout out to one of the other insane side characters, Buttcleft Jeff, played by Clint Kelly. Buttcleft Jeff is eating donuts on a park bench and gives Chris, the lead, some advice. I forget the names individually, unfortunately, but gives some words of advice. And then just as she's leaving, she's like, why do we call you Buttcleft Jeff? And he gives this, you know, essentially, you know, my anus is a Play-Doh, you know, shape-a-rama, and goes to the, like, it's just, it's so insane, but it's so Chris Seaver. And I noticed too that Clint Kelly's jacket has a bunch of pins and they're all super 80s, like Duran Duran. And I don't know. I liked that moment. It was one of those insane weirdnesses that sort of broke up the plot moments that we've talked about. There was also that song. So I think the longest moment for me that maybe could have been broken up visually was the campfire scene. Because they get some great story out of that, and there are some funny moments, like Josh saying that he's, you know, been contacted by aliens, but it's a long time of them in the same stage setup, right? They're essentially in a line and we just pan back and forth, and that becomes problematic, because especially because we're used to in these Seaver movies going from zero to balls to the wall and then back down and then zero to balls to the wall. So when you keep it visually stagnant, it's hard to reinvigorate and go back to 10, because visually I haven't gotten the cue that things are going to switch to the new joke, the new scene, the new moment. But that said, technically it was well done. That's a great nightlight scene, and that's not easy to do, I can tell you that. So I think have we hit everyone? Did I tag everyone as to what we think about this? Okay. Now, I haven't asked Chris, but I think this is one of Chris's favorite movies that he's done. And I will say, I'll start. I would recommend this movie to people who thought Moist Fury, and go back and listen to our review of Moist Fury with the Warriors. People who thought that sounded interesting, but maybe a little much for them, or, hey, I live with someone who's going to lose their mind if I put that on the TV. This is much more palatable because it's not as independent feeling. It is very much in the vibe of, if you want American Pie but you don't want to be a bro from 2002, watch this movie. Because the humor is sort of the, you know, Stifler's mom and Stifler eating dog shit from whatever sequel that was, level of sophomoric, but I think it is smarter than that film is. Also, if you like Chris Seaver, I mean, I have to say, I guess I'm begrudgingly becoming a pretty big Chris Seaver fan, because watching so many bad movies, watching ones that actually have moments where I stop what I'm doing from multitasking to look up, like all of Last Chance Lance's. I mean, what is he even looking at when he's mugging to the camera? I can't get that spacey stare that he has. He's just spitting lines into the ether, and it's really well done. But yeah, I enjoyed this one. I don't think it has the insanity or the comical shock that Moist Fury has. It definitely was more intent on following the coming of age journey with these characters. And that, I do think, hindered some of the humor. And the wordplay and the dialogue, I just don't know that we were prepped to recognize it as easily as we would have had it been, you know, if it was an episode of Gilmore Girls, I would have laughed a lot more jokes because I would have known where they were going to be. And I didn't hear. So I'd recommend this movie. And again, Chris Seaver makes it very known. In the first 5 minutes, there is vaginal discharge on hands. It doesn't get flung like it does in Moist Fury. It gets eaten. And that is, I'm going to hazard to say, Jell-O vanilla pudding. Is that what that is? I'm just going to throw that out there. I think that's what,
very much like vanilla pudding.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was real. That was practical.
I think she even uses the same line that is uttered at some point in Moist Fury, right? Like, it's going to be a moist day or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, you know what you're going to get. And he hits you with the hardest stuff right away. There's also, I think somewhere I saw in some trailer or something that this has got gratuitous sex. It does not. There's actually no nudity. There is one character who appears to be cupping his penis and balls, but you don't see anything. But I do hope he had Purell, because we all sweat down there. So, Jeff, would you recommend The Weirdsies? If so, to who and why?
I'm kind of like 50-50 here, because I didn't like this as much. I did suggest The Moistest of Furies. But this one was, I don't know. It just didn't work for me. There definitely were some funny parts, but I kind of just got to the point where I was like, it felt long, and it just felt like the same kind of sketch for an hour and 7 minutes or whatever. I don't know. It needed either more, I don't know, just insanity mixed in there, where you just like go completely off the beaten path. Or Death maybe bomb. it just needed, like, I don't know. I go back to that, like, just a character that is like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I don't know, something for us to like latch onto as a viewer. Cause like, I needed that like thing that was like normal to like contrast with all of this insanity, with every single character being completely insane and completely off the wall. It basically lost contrast, and it was just hard. Cause like you were saying, it's like,
so you can't laugh when you're already exhausted.
Yeah. I guess back to what your point. Yeah. There's just, and wasn't
I,
that.
It's interesting you say that. Cause I guess oftentimes when we get this right, when we have a group of crazy characters, the world around them is normal, you know, like the clerk then is normal or something. Yeah. I'm actually was reminded as you were talking of the short-lived Nicktoon Kablam, that had a bunch of different shows hosted by animated brother and sister. I love that show, but I find myself now owning it, not watching it often. And if I do, I don't watch it like back to back to back, like I do with, you know, Rocko's Modern Life or even Angry Beavers or something, right? Like, and I think it's to your point that Kablam had nonsense throughout the whole thing. And there was, even though they were different segments, I never really breathed because each segment was equally bonkers. And then you look at a show like Robot Chicken, you know, Seth Green's setup is that it's channel changes in between, and each channel change, except for very few like running gags or something like a robot having sex with a washing machine, it starts at zero and then quickly goes to 10. So you have a reset moment every time. And when you're stuck, it's that whole, when you're stuck at level 10 crazy or even level 8 crazy, like I think we are here, if Moist Fury is 10, Weird Z's is probably 7 or 8, we hit that level the whole time and we get tired because there's no time for our brain to process the next thing. And it feels like it's longer than it is, which is what you're getting at. I think that's a viable argument. Greg, would you recommend the Weird Z's? And if why to who?
Well, to answer your question, no, I would not. But here's the twist.
Well,
Jeff,
you ruined your Christmas gift, I guess.
Yeah. The entire Chris Sieber collection on DVD. But here's the twist for you, Jeff. I would not recommend it. But if in my patented alternate, I would say if you like what we've had to say about Chris Sieber, go watch Moist Fury. That would be my alternate recommendation. Weird Z's, it's very disappointing because other than the premise, I thought this was just objectively better. I thought it was directed better. I thought it was written better, acted better. It is
a beautiful poster. It really does. I'm not even joking. Like the poster is so classic and fantastic. Yeah. And the title card for this movie, when she's walking through against the brick.
Oh, stuff, yeah.
I mean, it looks great. It really does. Yeah, it just performs well, you know?
It just, for me, I mean, subjectively, this wasn't my thing, and I had real issues with it, and that's entirely subjective. I guess that's pretty much it. I guess if you've hated everything we've said about Chris Sieber, consider Airplane. I think that this is kind of the much edgier version of that type of comedy, where it's something where you can't predict anything coming at you. When you were talking about Josh, I was thinking a lot about Stephen Stucker in Airplane, who plays Johnny Henshaw Jacobs, the like funny kind of wild air traffic controller.
Who pulls
the lights off when they're trying to land the plane.
And it's interesting, as you say recommendations, and I mentioned it, I would also recommend Mallrats. If you want something that is theater playable in the normal mainstream way, but you like this kind of humor, Mallrats is always one of my favorite films. Jason Lee, of course, post-pro skate days in that film. It's the Kevin Smith movie. And just side story, I met Jason Lee once, super nice. He was eating at a restaurant my friend worked at, and there was like no one there because it was the middle of the week. I was currently unemployed in Huntington Beach, California. And he called me and said, "Hey, that guy you really like is here." And I knew exactly what he meant. I must've just been talking about Jason Lee, because I think he's fantastic. And I was like, no kidding. And I had just moved to California, so I didn't have my DVDs or anything. So I ran to a Strawberry's when it was still there and not a pawn shop. And I bought the only copy, it was a used copy of Mallrats on DVD. And I ran over there and I got a table behind him. And they were recording something for some MTV, I don't know, it was a clip show or whatever. And this is what I remember him saying, because they were like, "Give us a joke, give us," because they just brought out the food, and they give us a joke. And so he would just joke after joke after joke. And the only one I remember is they put the fish in front of him, and they go, "What do you think?" And he goes, "God, smells like your mom last night." That is all I remember Jason Lee saying until they were getting ready to wrap up. I stood up and I said, "Hey, like, I'm a huge fan. I'm sorry, but would you mind signing this for me?" And he looks straight at my friend, who's his waiter, and goes, "You rat bastard son of a bitch, ratted me out." And then he signed my thing, and that was it. So thumbs up to Jason Lee. Watch Mallrats. I think this is actually a good pair with Mallrats. It's kind of the same age concept. Like, this is, it feels like a fancified version of my childhood. Mandy, you're last up. Would you recommend The Weirdsies? If so, why and to who?
Like, I guess, like, if you're really liking the craziness of all this Receiver stuff we're talking about, like, go for it. But otherwise, like, I'd probably give this one a pass as well. I was really uncomfortable with, like, the subject matter and plot of this one, plus the novelty had worn off. I don't know, Receiver might have been, like, more of, like, a one-and-done kind of concept art for me. But yeah, I just give this one a pass.
All right. Well, and I will say, as I said, I enjoyed this movie. I don't think it was as wild as Moist Fury. I do miss Deathbone. He's a fun character. There is a Toblerone reference in there. So, all part of the connected
community. That was
community.
Nice, I will say.
And also, I hope to see, if you listen to our mini-sodes on Fridays, I did a review last week of or the week before of Assault on the Snake Men by Adam Riot Thorne of riotatthemovies.com. And there's actually a shared universe that they've created with Chris Seaver where they've referenced various Chris Seaver moments, including Bloodfart Lake. So if you like this like me and you're out there, expand, start reaching out and get you these, and you will find a wild group of parallels here. And also, Tad Mascheroni said he is very sad he missed this. I just want to shout that out to good Chris Seaver, all our fans out there. Thank you guys so much for listening. Playing us out, as always, is the Chud. I want to let you know we'll have a new part one of a new thematic pair of episodes next week. Write reviews for us on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. Send us to cultandclassicpodcast@gmail.com, the screen name you write the review under, and your address, and we will mail you some cool shit. And we really appreciate you. Thank you guys so much for listening, and have a great day. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to Cult and Classic Podcast. This podcast is important to me, but what's more important are the rights, privileges, and freedom from violence of everyone in this country and in this world. And that means supporting Black Lives Matter. If you'd like to make a donation, please go ahead and visit cultandclassicpodcast.com, where we have a list of places you can donate and help out. And please stay safe.